thank you for downloading the most current episode of VHS Rewind. I had been digging through some old hard drives and trying to get my media in order for archiving, came across some episodes of Fuyuk and For Your Consideration, which I would like to share with you. For Your Consideration was a podcast that Alex Saltz and myself started back in the summer of 2011, and Chris Hassler began co-hosting with me towards the end of season one. Eventually, Chris and I would end the For Your Consideration podcast after 24 episodes to start a whole new show entitled Fuyuk, and that was in January of 2013. Fuyuk would run for a total of 10 episodes, before Chris and I renamed the show and started over again with VHS Rewind. I hope you enjoy this look back at where the current show came from. Enjoy the show.
It's VHS Rewind.
See, break it.
Make that up, Chris. You cannot make that up.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode. If that music got you popping and locking and moonwalking across your living room or wherever you happen to be listening to this.
Good for you.
Good for you.
What have you got me watching this week?
We are covering Breakin' this week, the 1984 Lucinda Dickey starring classic. I am Chris, and I'm joined once again by my homie, Mark.
What's up, y'all?
You know, I wanted to ask you, like, every, as they say in the movie Break-In, every good dancer has a street name. So I'm wondering what your street name would be, Mark.
MC Mark Kimos.
Wow, you had that ready. Oh, my God.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, I was thinking I'd be...
I'm sorry, go on.
I would be something like, I'd be white bread. Or I would be, you could even call me Dork, but if you put a captain next to that, it sounds cool. Captain Dork.
Captain Dork with.
Dr. Yeah. Dork is even better.
With an E at the end. it's almost like, that's pretty good. when you grew up on the streets,
like you did.
Yeah, and you crawled out of the sewers of Cedarhurst like I did. You learn a lot from the streets and the what do you call them? Street people.
Bums? Hobos?
Yeah, we don't really have any bums or hobos, but the police make sure that they, they stay on their side and we stay on ours. But you learn a lot from being on the streets.
This is Break-In is actually going to start our Black History Month series of flicks that we might be covering. We're really bad at just recording in general, but recording a series of flicks is always, it's always tough. You know, this might be spread out and we might bump into our celebration of the KKK month that we might do later on down the road. So
that's April, right?
Yeah, we cover all sides.
We are against everyone, and at the same time, we're 100% on your side.
Always. You know, it's funny. I checked, just to have that ready. I checked, and the KKK was formed in December. December 24th was the first meeting of the KKK.
Christmas Eve, of course. I'm having a feeling that there probably were no Jews there. But being that, Hanukkah, maybe not necessarily on the same day. I mean, once in a while it will fall on the same day, but you never know. They could have made it as long as it wasn't during Shabbos.
So, I mean, I don't know if we'll get to more films in this series, but that is the plan at the moment. So I felt really bad because – I picked Break-In because it happened to be on cable this month, and I taped it. So,
I'm sorry, I just have to interrupt. What would we choose for, like, White History Month? Like, Lucas?
For KKK Month?
Yeah, like, what would be a white bread movie? Like, I'm saying, like, Lucas or Fast Times at Ridgemont High or something.
Well, we could do, like, Mississippi Burning. We could do The Klansman with Richard Burton.
It's pretty topical, actually.
Right?
Well, I mean, it's pretty controversial.
The Klansman is supposed to be really, really funny bad because Lee Marvin and Richard Burton were so trash during the movie at all times.
Well, we can definitely discuss that more, off the show, but I'm thinking that Break-In 2 is definitely on your agenda.
I got to tell you, I picked Break-In because it was on cable and I was prepared. I was prepared to have fun with it because, the dancing, first, let me say this first. I am not a dancer. I can't move my body any which way. I can barely walk straight. And I know it's like mean to make fun of like these dancers who are really amazing, but you have to admit this is like time capsule funny. Okay. From the fashions to the dance moves. I mean, are people still breakdancing nowadays? I just don't know.
Somewhere.
Do people still do the robot like they did in this movie? I mean, you see, I'm doing it right now. You can't tell, but I'm doing robot movies.
I mean, the robot and, certain forms of breakdancing really became popular again thanks to the Beastie Boys, but that was about 20 years ago.
Yeah. Wait. The Beastie Boys did breakdancing and robot movement?
Well, you can see that they definitely represent that era of rap. See, to give you a little history, I saw Break-In in the theater when it first came out.
Was there any shootings when you went to see?
No. But At the same time, within probably the same year, I saw Run DMC perform at Nassau Coliseum. Rap was like a really, really big thing. It was breaking out of the underground. It wasn't like this bubblegum kind of weird, bad rap. It was good rap. And what the Beastie Boys did was, after their first level of success in the late 80s, they did it again in the early 90s. And they kind of brought back that breakdancing. It's almost like they brought it back on a level of retro, like early retro. Do you know what I mean?
They made it cool.
They made it cool kind of before it was supposed to be cool again. And, because you can go back to, that song Sabotage, for instance. Do you remember that?
I think so.
It was one of
the bigger... If you'll hum a few bars of it.
I can even look it up real quick, but they brought that back, and at that time they were kind of pushing that whole thing. I'm sorry, here's a little clip of it. You know this, right?
I think so, yeah.
So, yeah, that's basically that. And, they kind of kept it, I guess you want to say, real, because, they were really a big part of that New York early aspect of hip-hop and everything. Even there were a bunch of Jewish kids from, rich families. But, they basically brought it back and blah, blah, blah. But I don't think anybody's doing it now. If they're doing it, they're doing it kind of like... ironically.
One hopes.
Yeah. But anyway, so get back to breaking. I'm sorry.
I was prepared to just be mocking this from beginning to end.
Of course.
And I don't know what it was. I was in a really good mood that day. It was a Friday night. I had the weekend ahead of me. It was a good week at work. I had no stress. And I was just mellowing out. And I actually just loved Breakin'. I mean, I really loved it. It's got the funny bits to it. It's got the funny fashions, the funny 80s fashions. It's got the funny dance. I find some of these moves kind of funny.
Right.
Even though, again, I admire, that the way that they can roll their body so that it like make waves with their bodies and the robot is still funny. I find that funny.
Well, what did you think about this movie when it came out? Do you even recall it?
I do, but it's something I would never, ever, ever have seen.
Okay.
And, outside of the presence of Ice-T as an MC at the dance-offs, we'll call them,
Pretty much the same, too, which is... crazy.
Yeah, there wasn't really much rap in here. It was more like poppy, outside of like the kind of music that you heard opening the show here, and it's more poppy than
rap. I'd say rap. This was like that breakthrough time where it was like a mixture of a little bit of disco and
rap.
It was
there's a song during a montage that I think it was the where we're teaching you to dance, Lucinda montage. Like, I think it was Chaka Khan or something. It was like really dancey. And it made me download illegally the soundtrack. I was very happy to put that on my iPod.
Might be public access by this point. Not public access.
Yeah, that's true.
public domain.
But I realized asking you to watch this might have been a bit much. I could see where the normal human being who was not in the most forgiving mood that I was in that night might not really make it through this movie or want to make it through the movie. So I don't know if you actually watched it or if...
I got three quarters through it. And I just,
did you? Okay.
I knew how it ended. I sat through it once when I was 11. So...
All right. Well, why don't we talk about it?
Well, I mean, one, she's this rich girl who you don't know is rich.
don't know that until Break Into Electric Boogaloo, which is now on my 2C list.
And she's driving a car I would love to have. I would restore the crap out of this car. It was, I'm going to guess this was a 1960 VW Beetle convertible. And it looked pretty straight to me. It had some body work done to it, and it, you know, had primer and all that stuff. And, you know, basically the VW Beetle was the poor person's car of the 80s, I would say.
It looked very big. Big, yeah. And boxy. Although
I don't know if they're, if the convertibles are bigger or not, but it did look bigger and wider.
Yeah, yeah.
It could have also been, they could have also added fenders that expand the width, because that was like a big thing back then, you know, kind of like low riders and stuff like that. Because it was L.A., right, that they were in?
It was L.A., yeah.
And that was another thing. It was L.A. So it's a very different scene than the East Coast. You know, it's a whole West Coast, East Coast thing. And it's an early representation of that, how different it is on, you know, because, you know, you got New York, it's a little bit tougher. You know, West Coast, it's a little bit more, you know, guys living in, I don't know, a shed. Like, what was he living in?
Ozone? Yes, he was in somebody's, I think it was a storage facility.
No, it would have been, it was a lot dirtier than a storage facility.
That's why I think it was like his parents' garage or something, like literal garage.
Yeah.
Or stable, because the doors kind of opened out, you know, as if you're entering a stable or something. But so we follow Lucinda Dickey. She stars as Kelly, and she's a dancer. She's I was going to say she was a classical dancer, but people were saying she's a jazz dancer.
Jazz modern dancer.
And you know, she's in the viewpoint of the in the sights of her teacher, who's this lech of a dance instructor, and his come on to her at the beginning.
It was awesome. Of the
movie. It is awesome. I want to use handsome. That clip.
Good looking guy. He's a dancer.
He's he's not an actor. I can tell you that for sure. And he was actually in Captain EO. And what else did I see here? He was in Thriller.
Now, was that Franco, or was
that was Franco? Oh, yes,
Ben Loki.
Yes.
You know, he was in Staying Alive too.
Also as
a dancer.
Notice his credit is the same in each of these films. Dancer, now, dancer.
Now you see he was also in the TV movie Elvis.
Yeah, what? Get the, who was he in that?
As dancer. He was a choreographer.
Oh wow, he choreographed.
Oh wait, here we go. There's a 6 degrees of separation here. He was also in Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Awesome.
We as, you and I both like as a dancer.
As a dancer.
yeah. No, that's not the first time that we've mentioned that movie on the show.
No, I actually like that.
Yeah, no, we have to do that in the future.
I think we should do musicals month. I would love to do musicals. I just love musicals.
Let's just do Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts.
Okay. No. Not Xanadu. You don't want to do Xanadu.
No,
Grease 2.
Grease 2, I do. It's not much of a musical, though.
Lucinda, she's it's fair. This is fair game. So Lucinda, thumbs up. Would you tap that?
Yeah, I mean, I thought she was. I don't like that hair. You know, I know you said you think it was cute. It was also very period. It was also, you know, it was the period of time. I think she's very pretty.
And, yeah, I think she's pretty. She's got amazing dancer's body.
Didn't like her hair. That was my whole thing. But hair grows, so whatever.
So we find Lucinda. She works in a diner, but she's destined to be a dancer because, as she says, now Lucinda is not. Let's be honest. She's not. Nobody in this movie is a good actor. Nobody. But I think she has a charm that actually won me over, and everybody does. And their interactions together, again, they're not the greatest thespians, but I think they just get along really well.
I don't know. I think Adolfo Quinones did a pretty crazy job when he was mad at Telly. he really showed a lot of emotion.
Flatly. So Lucinda has a classmate in the dance class. What was it? Adam? I think his name was Adam. Let's call him Gay Adam.
His real name is Phineas Newborn III. Not kidding.
And he's really gay.
Yeah.
Really gay.
He was actually, you know, gay. I mean, that's pretty early for somebody that flamboyant to be in a film. Like, that's right. I mean,
and
maybe
out
not,
about
I don't
it,
know.
Too. When they walk into a club later, Adam is like checking out the bouncer guy who looks like he's going to shoot
him. And he's laying it on really thick. But at the same time.
With the pink outfits.
Yeah. Well, he's a dancer.
I mean, yeah, I guess so. I guess so.
Stereotype right there.
So Adam takes Lucinda, we'll call her Kelly, to meet her friends, Orlando and Tony, or Ozone.
And Turbo.
And Turbo. That's their street name, because every good dancer has a street name. And Kelly gets to watch Ozone and Turbo do their stuff down by the beach. And if you notice, I don't know if you noticed or not, Jean-Claude Van Damme is in the background.
I didn't notice, but I do know about this.
Dancing his ass off hilariously. I mean, he's so clearly trying to get seen by the camera that he's just doing all these moves. It was amazing. And then at the end of the scene, Turbo and Ozone are doing their stuff and wowing the crowd, but then a rival dance gang, I forget what they call, Electro Rock, I think they were called?
Yeah, Electro Rock 1, 2, and 3. That's what they're listed in IMDb. It's Bruto Poppin' Taco Falcon.
Poppin' Pete.
And Lollipop.
She's the girl who shows up later.
She was ugly. I'm sorry.
And short.
I didn't like her at all.
These guys come and just throw down to Ozone and Turbo with dance. I mean, they were talking shit with dance. It was amazing how they were like, I'm going to fuck you up with the dance.
It was like a dance-off, you know?
Yeah, it was amazing. I'm going to fuck you up, but they're doing like dance moves, saying it.
Amazing? I mean,
I'm just saying it was amazing in that they were like talking shit to this guy with dance. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And there's Jean-Claude in the back. And then, so, I didn't get this, like, why Ozone always walked away from trouble. Like he just wouldn't, you know, these guys are throwing down and he just walks away from them. Later on, he goes to visit Lucinda Kelly at her dance studio. And, of course, Franco doesn't like street dancing.
Yeah.
He's obnoxious about it, and he's, you know, being so obnoxious to Ozone. But again, Ozone just walks away, and I'm just like, he's got issues.
He's a beaten man. he wants no conflict.
So
Ozone is a pretty deep character.
So is Turbo. No, just kidding.
He does have that sweeping scene,
which is. Did you notice before that, Ozone mentions Fred Astaire and Turbo's like, who? I was like, And that's where I started wondering, like, is this, you know, I guess it's dancing. Is it dancing? I don't know dancing. I'm not a dancer. I just don't know if the robot, is that a dance? I mean, come on.
Sure, it is, I guess. It's
locking, popping.
Well, I mean, if you wanted to find dance as a form of expression with music, there you go.
I guess, yeah. All right. I mean, we could have this argument for the whole show, but I was just, again, like ballroom dancing is still around, but I didn't think break dancing was still around. I didn't think robot dancing was still around.
Well, you take something like ballroom dancing, and there are certain rules, of course. You know, there's a certain etiquette. While, you know, with this, while there may be a certain level of physical ability that is needed. It's not really, there's no etiquette really.
And again, I marveled at the way they can move their bodies and you know, the moonwalk, you know, is that dancing? I was never a fan of that either, but it's amazing. Like, anyway.
Like, so, is the worm the same thing as, like, the jig, you know?
So, meanwhile, Kelly, after meeting Ozone and Turbo, also goes to meet a showbiz agent who's going to get her a gig, sends her out on auditions. And did you recognize that actor?
No, I mean...
He was Christopher McDonald, and he's been in every bad movie you can possibly think of. I'm sure he's a familiar face to... If you watch a lot of movies, he was in Gilmore.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I don't know what else he's been in that people would know. I know he was in the sequel.
Boardwalk Empire.
Dukes of Hazzard movie. He was in Dukes of Hazzard, the beginning, as Boss Hogg.
He's a character actor. He just kind of pops up in every TV show. Actor.
You would recognize him if you've seen him. He does everything, movies, TV. And he does a moonwalk in this movie, which I found.
He plays the uncomfortable white guy in a suit.
But he, you know, he's got a crush on Kelly, and Ozone was already falling for her.
And Ozone is basically, James is the only person that Ozone actually slightly mouths off to.
Yes, true.
Kind of like, I don't like that dude, you know, that type of thing. And then he walks away.
So after some bad auditions, Adam invites Lucinda, hey, let's go to the Radiotron, I think it was called, this club where the street dancers throw down, I guess, and show their stuff. And actually, during the broom scene, the electro rock guys come and just – that's another scene that I really want to use a clip from when they're just yelling at each other. Like, I hear your mama calling – we're like piranha. We're going to eat you up and spit out what we don't like. It was just all these lame talking shit stuff. Really good. But they're saying Friday night, you be there. So Ozone and Turbo show up, and then Lucinda's there. And it's our first dance off where they do these freeform improv dances, I guess. I mean, I don't know how else to explain it.
They throw it down, I guess.
And there again, you know, the electro rock guys are just talking shit with the body. They're like, the guy, like, he takes something out of his mouth and pretends to throw it down and is like, take that, motherfucker. And Ozone's like, all right, I'm going to do this. I don't know if you watched that scene, but I loved where Ozone can't take it anymore. And he's like, what? He runs across the room and then starts like dancing right in front of the guy's face. It was amazing. It really was amazing.
I did see that. I did see that part.
So it looks like Ozone and Turbo have won, but then Pop and Taco and Pop and Pete bring out their ace in the hole, Lollipop Sanchez, which is the little girl we were talking about who just disses them to no end.
Mm-hmm.
And they got nothing after that because they need a girl. So they're going to train Lucinda. And in my favorite scene, they actually do train Lucinda. And this is where the movie really was, like I say, it was charming. And I was like, oh, these are really sweet people. And they train Lucinda in the art of street dancing so that they can have a rematch with Electro Rock.
It was kind of like Rocky III.
Yes.
Yeah. Actually. You know, he had to go back to the roots.
This was a year after Rocky III. So, and of course, at the rematch, Ozone and Turbo and Lucinda just triumph. But the movie's not over yet, and it turns into there's an audition that Christopher McDonald's character wants to send Lucinda on, but Lucinda wants to bring her street dancers. It's the biggest thing in dance, and they only want classical dancers, and they don't want street dancers. So Lucinda's like, no, get us in there.
Right.
And of course, they go to audition dressed in tuxes because they figure that'll get them in the door. But somehow Franco has got his clutches in this audition, this competition. I'm not sure what it was. And the judges are this snooty bunch of old folks who are dancing the dancers, who are judging the dancers. And so Ozone can't take that anymore, and he rips off his tux and forces them to watch the street dance audition.
Forces them.
Well, you know, he just doesn't want to say get out. And it was, again, here's where the movie was charming. You know, these old folks start getting into this street dancing. Any semblance between reality and what would actually happen is entirely coincidental.
Right.
And so they get, so they charm the judges, they get the show, and at the end of the movie, it turns into Stayin' Alive, Satan's Alley, with this bizarre dance number from the show, which, again, ends the movie. And they were already planning a sequel because there are title cards saying, if you love this, Electric 2, oh no, what was it? Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo is coming. So they were really confident that this was going to do well.
Well, here's the thing. For one, at the time this came out, it was the beginning of the summer. It was in May, the beginning of May. It was a full month before Beat Street came out. Now, these were the two big rap movies of the early 80s. DC Cab came out the previous winter, which was not a rap movie, but at the same time, it was like an urban type of thing. And it really, actually, I shouldn't have even brought that up. I do tend to group those together. But Beat Street and Breakin' are two movies that are really peas in a pod.
Don't forget Rappin'.
I never heard of Rappin'.
By the same director.
2 weeks after Beat Street came out, Karate Kid came out. The Karate Kid came out. So you have these kind of, you know, Breakin' was forgotten, basically. Because Beat Street was much better, in my opinion. And then Karate Kid kind of did so well with the kids that it really just, you forgot about it. And it's also funny that, you know, Beat Street's based on the East Coast, New York, and you get Breakin' again, that was based out in California. So, you know, you really do get that whole West Coast, East Coast thing. Breakin' was also made for nothing. It was $36,000 to make this movie. So, yeah.
Was Philly that little?
Yeah, it was $36,000. They probably made that much on a weekend.
I don't know if it was the print, but like some of the scenes, I could hardly hear the talking.
Yeah, I mean, this was a movie made for nothing. I mean, this movie.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, where was the sound guy on this?
Yeah, he was probably holding the camera.
The scene in the diner at the beginning, I had to turn it up when Kelly's talking to a friend who comes to visit. There was another scene where I just couldn't hear it very well. It's like, turn it up.
But, you know, when this came out, you know, this is when rap is really, really getting mainstream. You know, it was, you know, it was just a bigger deal out of nowhere. And you had, these are the movies that everybody wanted to go see. You know, it was just, these were the movies that you have to see this summer type of thing. And they were early in the, you know, it wasn't even a summer really, you know, but it was, you know, this came out in May. But that's why they did so well, you know, anyway. So Breakin' 2 Electric Boogaloo, on the other hand, I remember was probably much more successful, right?
I think so, yeah. This was successful, but I think that one was even bigger.
But this also had the ability, you know, because Beat Street was coming out. So it was like, you got to see this. It has a whole month of getting into theaters, and boom, you know, you got Beat Street and Breakin' in theaters at the same time. That's a big deal to me. You know, I remember it was a big deal when I was a kid.
What was Beat Street? Was that music or was there a story there?
I don't remember the story. Who is in that? That represented two.
Oh, it does. Yeah, it does have a story. An aspiring DJ from the South Bronx and his best friend, a promoter, try to get into show business by exposing people to hip hop music.
Yeah, you got like
Ray Dawn Chung is the only name I recognize.
You got Dougie Fresh in this movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, you have live performances in here that are much more, you know, and I'm not putting down the West Coast. I'm just simply saying a little bit grittier. At least that's what I took from it.
And let's not forget, you know, Breakin' is a canon film from Golden and Globus. So, you know, again, I'm not really sure they were tuned into the actual scene of anything, whether it's breakdancing or rap or anything.
Well, Beat Street was, I'm looking here, and it was definitely focused towards a scene. I mean, you have Kumo D, you have Brenda K. Starr, which she was kind of a big deal back then, more of a singer, though. Rocksteady Crew, New York City Breakers, Magnificent Force, The Furious Five, Soul Sonic Force, which was kind of a big deal. You know, you had a lot of people who, you know, they were on the radio back then. Especially, and Ray Dawn Chung was, this was the period of time she was trying to do stuff.
Yep. Right around the time of Soul Man.
Soul Man, wow. I think that was a year later. I think Soul Man was like 85. Or maybe
was it? I really don't remember.
But, you know, she also did that movie with Michael Keaton. About the lottery? Do you remember that movie?
Yeah, The Squeeze?
Yeah, The Squeeze. Yeah, exactly.
And don't forget, she was in Commando with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that year. Okay.
But I liked her. I don't know whatever came. I don't know what happened to Ray Dawn Chung. I'm going to go find
her. Yeah, I don't know. She's still working. That's a good question.
She's in her 50s. She's...
Oh, it's over.
Yeah, she's doing some movies. I don't know. She has like some kind of... She has a certain look where she might, you know, be able to hold her looks for a while.
Mm.
She's in that movie Cyrus. That's kind of weird.
Really?
Yeah, as Vivian.
Wow.
But anyway, so Breakin', you know, I didn't get through it. But, I mean, it was a $36,000 movie. I mean, I'm not going to get through it.
I did. And again, I found it very sweet.
Yeah, you found it enjoyable.
Charming and... I really like, honestly, I really like the soundtrack. I'm looking forward to Breakin' 2 Electric Boogaloo. I would have my kids watch this. You know, I would definitely have my kids.
Yeah, it's fun. It's definitely lighthearted. It's fun. It's
yeah. I mean, no, we're blood, talking PG, you know? Stuff here. This is nobody gets hurt.
Yeah, I mean, the worst thing that you could say is, and I already forgot his name. Where is it? Ozone. Ozone gives the cold shoulder to Special K every once in a while.
Yeah.
And wait, was he driving the Beetle at one point?
Yeah, when they, for some reason, they go to I don't know, like a fast food place. And that's the scene where Ozone says, "No, I'll treat." And Lucinda says, "No, I'll treat." And Ozone says, "No, I'll treat." And everybody says, "Okay." And Ozone gives a look to everybody. And of course, that's left. That's supposed to be funny.
Oh.
I was charmed. What do you want?
But so I they can't go picture to this Ozone fast food driving place. Stick shift. That's all.
They go to this fast food place to have some RC Cola, which is placed very, very right in front of everybody. And some cowboy hicks are standing next door and like...
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that scene. That was a great scene.
I was like, what is this scene doing here? This is totally not relevant to the plot at all. I guess it brings them closer together. But I was like, oh, man, that is really bad.
Basically, it's like the bar fight scene.
Yeah, like a bar fight from like a 1930s Western.
If you're drinking root beer. Because
they throw people on tables, which smash all over in 1,000 pieces.
And you know, I kind of watched that really closely. One guy punches another guy for literally no reason.
No, he punches the guy he's been sitting with.
Yeah, It makes no sense. It's almost like the guy he's sitting with is punching him because he's fighting with
because
ozone.
He's laughing that Turbo spilled soda off, spilled RC cola on him.
That was the weirdest thing. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know why that. And, you know, this movie has a couple of places, scenes like that, where it's, this is so unnecessary. It advances the plot. I don't know how long this movie was.
They should have sped it up and played, like, Benny Hill music in that scene. I think, you know, that would have made it more funny.
I mean, was it 90 minutes? It seemed kind of short, and it seemed padded. It was padded. Yeah. But again, I was under its spell.
Good.
I was like, oh.
Well, I don't know.
A pleasant surprise. Another winner from Canon.
I turned it off because it was just getting kind of late. It was okay. I didn't dislike it. It was a pretty easy movie from, you know, what I watched. I meant to finish it. I just didn't get around to it. If it was on TV, I'd probably just leave it on. That says a lot for me, because I would just turn something on. I take more, you know, I'm on the whole side of, you know, well, you know, it's more muscles to frown than smile. It's like, I'll just frown, thanks.
Ouch. You
know, I'll just be fine. But, all right, man. So, yeah, so Break-In, would you see it again? Would you spend the $6.75 you did back then?
I watched it a few times, actually, just preparing for this. Because I liked it. Again, I liked the music, and the dancing is fun to watch, you know, whether I'm laughing at it or marveling at the way they like do their roll, body roll things. It starts at the head and winds its way. I don't know. I can't explain.
So do you think you're going to watch Beat Street next, or Break-In 2 Electric Boogaloo?
Well, I think I want to see Break-In 2 just to see what happens to these characters that I've grown to love.
Well, in Break-In 2, is it the same cast?
It is, yes. It's the same cast, and just from the Roger Ebert review, of which was a rave, by the way, for Break-In 2, he gave it 3 stars.
Wow.
Yes. He didn't like Break-In too much, but he liked Break-In 2 Electric Boogaloo a lot.
It only has 4.7 stars on IMDb, but I don't go by that because I don't really buy into
it. Yeah, I don't buy
it's
that.
It's the same cast almost.
Apparently they're trying to save a rec center from closing or from being demolished or something. So I guess they got to put on a show. That's all I got from whatever I read.
You got Ice-T back.
Oh, Ice-T is back.
Yeah.
What did you think? I don't know if you heard his rapping skills, but
it was fine. Now I have to go back. So I just read this thing about his music in the trivia section, where they used two of the music pieces that were in this in another film. Just give me a sec, sorry. Sorry, there it is. So, yeah, he had two music instrumental rap songs that were used later by the same producers in Missing in Action. Yeah, they were used as background music.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so
that's an awesome fun fact.
So it's kind of weird. It's it's called Tibetan Jam.
That is hilarious. I wonder which one that was. I guess it must have been during the Radiotron.
Yeah, it was also Ice-T's first feature film. It was Canon Film's most financially successful film. Not bad. Not bad at all. Canon Films, I'm sure, is bankrupt by now.
Yes, they're gone. They're defunct.
All right, cool. You know, I bet you the soundtrack did very well.
I would be interested to hear that. I don't know. But I like it. Like I say, I put it on my iPod just so I can relive this movie every day of my life.
Well, you're out of your mind. All right, so yeah, check out this podcast for more of these type of reviews. Subscribe, you know the title, you know what it's all about. Thanks for talking tonight, Chris, and I'll catch you next time.
Have a good one.